Hello and welcome to another episode of the Daily Remedy Podcast. Today we're here with Ms. Ashley Rogers, wife, mother, healthcare worker, who is also a chronic pain patient, who in 2017 had her life severely disrupted due to a poor implementation of the 2016 CDC guidelines. As a result, she developed a network through social media and other online presence and is now actively combating misinformation and pernicious applications of the CDC guidelines. And with that, I'd like to welcome Ms. Rogers.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Before we jump into your advocacy, can you tell us a little bit about your journey and your personal story as a patient, wife, mother, as you had mentioned?
Sure. I have had pain since I was a child. It was always told to me that it was growing pains, but I knew that there was something more. When I was 10 and I had a bout with rheumatic fever, and that caused a lot of problems with joint pain, heart problems. By the time I was 14, I had already had some herniated discs, which apparently is unusual for someone that age. And doctor after doctor, I had heard, "You're too young for that much pain," as if pain discriminates by age. So I wasn't taken serious. So around 18 or 19, I started going to a chiropractor thinking, oh, they'll fix me. They'll make me feel better. And of course, they promised that. Well, a lot of times it made it worse. Now I know that I have arachnoiditis, and chances are that I had it back then. And that could be why the chiropractic visits were making things so much worse. 2006 is when I started going to pain management. I didn't even know it existed. I didn't know it was such a thing, a specialty. And when I started, the doctor had suggested that I take narcotics, and I didn't want to. So for the first 6 months or so, we just did injections, and I didn't really get any relief from those. So then I agreed to go ahead and try pain medication, and it just gave me a whole different quality of life. I was able to sleep. I could work without taking breaks all of the time or walking hunched over from the pain. Definitely an improvement there as far as quality of life in general from pain medication. So that's where my journey started. I've been in pain management since. Always been compliant. That's one of the things that we hear with the false narratives, the misinformation.
Yeah. So then what happened in 2017 as a patient who is compliant, who is following the protocols as defined by your physician? What happened in 2017?
I went in for my regular appointment. Well, first I'll say in 2015, I had a pain pump implanted. And Everything was going well. I was receiving breakthrough medication for other pain, such as my neck, because the pump doesn't necessarily take care of that. And I went in one day, and the doctor said, "We can't give you your oxycodone anymore." And I felt like I was being singled out. Well, what did I do? Wow. I've never failed a test. I've never missed an appointment. So I was kind of upset because I knew that, first I felt singled out, like I said. And I knew that just meant more pain. So shortly after that, I saw on the news that there was a rally being held downtown, the Don't Punish Pain rally. And it was like, okay, it's not just me. This is happening to other people. Yeah. And so I started reaching out to others on social media, connecting with people, and saw that this was a growing problem. This was a nationwide problem. And we have to do something about it. And ever since, that's what I've been trying to do.
What is it about the advocacy online or the individuals whom you met through online mediums that help you validate what you're going through?
We understand each other. We've all been gaslit, among other things. Most people have had their medications cut, at least cut. A lot of people have been completely abandoned, and they can't find a new doctor to take them on. Pain management has really changed. It's almost non-existent in a lot of places, unfortunately.
Yeah. One of the problems we find is a lack of credibility, where patients in your situation, those who are advocating online, and as you have alluded to, experiences gaslighting, they don't seem to have the credibility that other patients may have or other patient advocates may bring. When did you notice this lack of credibility?
I would say early on. It's hard to get people to understand what we're going through. I always say people don't get it until they get it.
Yeah.
And that's been one of the biggest challenges, a big barrier to what we're trying to do.
So what are some things that you found works in terms of building credibility, whether it's through an online forum or direct advocacy with the legislator? What are some credibility building exercises that you found?
Well, it's pretty simple, just exposing the truth. In the beginning, like I said, it was harder to get people to listen, but slowly but surely, people outside of the pain community are starting to see what's happening. Sometimes it's by way of their own experiences or a loved one going to the hospital, maybe breaking a bone and being told to take Tylenol or having surgery and not being given any pain medication afterward. And then people say, what in the world? Why? And then I get to explain to them, you're not alone. This is happening everywhere, unfortunately.
And one of the things I often find is patients like yourself and patient advocates grow incredibly frustrated. And it's natural to vent in these types of situations. I often find that that leads those patients and patient advocates to be kind of deemed as fringe, if you will, or considered not as a serious person to listen to. What is your advice to patients and patient advocates who may be experiencing incredible frustration and just looking for a way to express that?
Yeah, it can definitely be frustrating. I'm frustrated often. But patience is helpful. You've just got to be patient with it. And you have to just stick with your persistence. And sometimes even let that frustration put that fire in you to work even harder at the cause. Yeah.
So we recently had a meeting with one of the staffers of Congressman Boyle, who is a legislator from the state of Pennsylvania. Talk to us about how you're able to secure that meeting. What steps and initiatives you took to reach out to them? How did you initially hear from them, and how long did it take to get a response from them?
The response was actually pretty quick. It was on one of my days where I was frustrated. Yeah. And I have mostly been working at a state level, trying to get legislation passed to protect doctors and patients alike. But we also need action at the federal level. So I was really upset and frustrated one day, and I said, I'm just going to do a mini telethon, and I'm just going to Google the Pennsylvania Congress people, and I'm going to call them all, and I'm going to email them. And that's what I did. So Congressman Boyle, they responded. And at first, actually, they said, we can't meet with you on this issue. And I didn't even tell them specifically that it was pain management that we were talking about. I just said a healthcare issue that's affecting millions. And they didn't want to meet, but I pushed. I emailed and they emailed back, and we went back and forth, and I guess they said fine. She's not taking no for an answer. And I wasn't. So they gave me the email of the staffer who does the healthcare issues. And we met with her. And that's how that came about. And you were part of it. And thank you.
And so, and of course, it was my pleasure. Before we get to the actual call itself, I want to maybe touch a little bit more on the initial reach out. And the reason why I'm doing that is because I want people to get a sense of how you engage, the email, the actual content that you had written, because I think that's important. You know, how you write, how you convey yourself impacts whether that dialogue continues or whether it just shuts off immediately. So you're frustrated, fair enough, but it was not as if you wrote these complex emails. You were very direct, very straight to the point, and you got the desired effect.
Right. So you got to keep your frustration to yourself. You can't let that spill over in your, at least in your initial emails. You have to get their attention and just tell them, we need help. Oftentimes, it depends on where they are as far as their political party. The Democrats right now are focusing a lot on women's rights with the whole abortion thing. So with this, Congressman Boyle is a Democrat, and we use that as an angle to say, look, we want the same rights. We want what you're saying, that the doctor-patient relationship should not be interfered upon by the government. We want the same thing. And so that's kind of where I start.
And by using an analogy of abortion or comparing the plight or the significance of the problem of opioids and pain and patients not receiving proper care to abortion, you're able to maybe raise a few more eyebrows than you would have otherwise.
Correct. Yes.
Yeah.
Because and I think see, they can see then, okay, there are issues that go beyond this one healthcare issue. We've got a lot.
It's amazing that it's amazing the cognitive dissonance that exists between different healthcare issues and how by tapping into one, you can get your desired intent for another one. And I think that's important for people to recognize that when you touch upon different pain points, you know, pun intended, if you will, you want to make sure that you understand the hot button issues that will get your attention, that the attention of your local legislator.
Yep. Now, and that seems to be the only way that they'll respond is if you're talking about a hot topic. Yeah.
So let's talk about the phone call or the actual video conference itself over Google Meet. So it was yourself, staffer from Congressman Boyle's office, myself, and Dr. Red Lawhorn. Yes. We had a phone call and we had some exchanges to prepare in advance. Could you talk a little bit about how we prepared for it and how we executed on that preparation?
Yeah. We usually, with these meetings, it's pretty standard that we meet the day before whoever is going to be part of it, so we all know what we're doing. We don't just go into it blind. We do our introductions, and then I usually kind of lead the conversation on why we're there, and then I have you guys as my support, and you guys are great at with the facts and things that you could, especially Red Lawhorn, he can recite the facts like nobody. Yeah. And that's just not, I'm not always the best speaker. So we work really well as a team.
Yeah. And one of the things I noticed, if I can provide my perspective, is the way you set it up by leading and emphasizing your lived experiences, your direct advocacy, and then having that complemented with some of the clinical data and, as you had mentioned, policy facts really creates a powerful impression because stories gravitate, facts solidify. And I think we did a decent job in at least challenging the pervasive narrative. One of the things I felt we did correctly was to raise questions and get them to start thinking that whatever is the pervasive narrative is not correct. And what I noticed in the staffer's response is that when we would challenge the narrative, she, at least by her facial expressions, had this mix of, okay, I'm listening, but you better tell me a good story. And so I felt like we toted that line. Yeah, tell a little bit about what you were kind of getting in terms of the feedback on the communication.
Yeah, I was watching her face, and she was definitely listening. Sometimes in these meetings, they're there, but they're like watching the clock. Yeah. And they're, you know, they're doing it because they have to, not because they're really listening. And I felt like she really was listening. Starting with my story, a little bit about, and then you create that human connection.
Yeah.
And really, she listened so much that that was pretty much, she didn't really have a lot to say. And her one question I remember was, if not big pharma and doctors, then who?
Yeah.
And you guys were really awesome in explaining that.
Yeah, you know, I noticed that question as well, and I saw that as a credibility question. So it was that she's hearing us, she feels that there's valid points being made. Okay, I'm going to ask you this one question, and I want to hear what you have to say. And so it went from, you know, her sipping her tea, looking at the clock, to, okay, I'm listening. This has started to make sense to me. And I think we did a great job in that sense. Now, the meeting went well. I would say that it was a great introductory meeting by all accounts. I think everybody would agree. How did you follow up? What were the next steps after the meeting?
Okay, so 2 days after the meeting, I just sent an email with articles that supported what we discussed. And I left the conversation open and made sure that they knew that we want to work with them, not necessarily tell them what to do or how to do it. But there's a big problem that needs solved, and we need their help, and we can help them. So just left it kind of open. So hopefully they'll get back to me and we can further this.
You know, of course. And I want to maybe get into the weeds a little bit. Obviously, we don't have to go word for word in your email, but you were careful in providing information, not flooding the inbox, but getting that right mix of enough information, but not too much. So how did you make that decision?
Good question. I didn't, like you said, I didn't want to overwhelm. So I picked the most, what I felt like were the most important articles. One being a chart that shows the significant decline in opioid prescribing over the last decade or so, and the overdose deaths that just keep going up, 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 up. And the correlation just isn't there. And I think visuals are really important. So that was one that I made sure I included. And then a couple other ones, just the data.
Yeah.
That sort of thing.
So did you get a response back? What are your anticipated moves now for next steps?
Well, it's only been a day, so not yet. Hopefully next week or sometime soon. If I don't hear from them, I will send another email, just a follow-up. Yeah. Hey, hey, I'm still here. I'm not going away.
Exactly.
Let's work together. Yeah. So, yeah. And I'll continue to do that. And I always say I do what I can when I can. It's hard when you're in pain. Just to do your daily life. So doing something like this, it's not for everybody. It's not easy. Do what you can when you can. And I really hope that other people will jump on, because we need more people to do this, whether it's a phone call a week, an email a week, and following up and holding them accountable too. They are our elected officials. And they can't just pick and choose the issues they want to work on. They need to listen to the issues, the things that are the problems people are having. And this isn't a small problem. This is a wide scale problem. And it has gone beyond the pain community too. Like I said, people that maybe break a bone or something, they're being told to take Tylenol. And it's just, it's gone too far.
So let me kind of transition to the macro, kind of the bigger picture. There are some who may say, in the grand scheme of things, you may have had a phone call, you may have had a meeting, but it's not going to do much. In your experience, we're not going to change the world in a day, as you will, but in your experience, do you see slight improvements or the marginal benefits of these types of engagements?
We are starting to see that they're more willing to listen. Mm-hmm. Some of it actually is thanks to the CDC. a lot of people don't trust them anymore. And our problems with the prescriptions started with the CDC guidelines. I mean, it's more involved than that, but not to get into too much. But it goes back to the CDC guidelines and the restrictions. And that's something that resonates with people. And that's getting attention. That's helping open people's eyes and ears. And then the mistrust of certain agencies. So we're chipping away at it a little at a time. Mm-hmm. And we have to. What other choice do we have? Yeah. We can't give up.
Agreed. Well, with that, Ms. Rogers, want to maybe conclude now, but obviously this is not the last time we will be engaging with Congressman Boyles, and obviously you know that whatever you need from me and whatever I need from you, we're going to be working together on that. Yes, but for those listening who may want to get involved and may be a bit apprehensive, like, I don't know how to write an email. I don't know how to reach out to all these people. Could you provide a contact email that people can reach out to you and ask maybe some of these simple questions? I mean, there's no such, it's all grassroots advocacy. And an email, no matter how simply formulated, is still an email and it still makes its mark. So please let the audience know how they can get a hold of you and get your advice.
Sure. My email address is CPP, as in chronic pain patient, advocate, 2831. @yahoo.com. And I'd be happy to help with templates, which I have sent to other people who requested them. They're pretty simple, just one pagers to start with. I can forward those.
Awesome.
Anything I can do to help. Sure thing.
No, that's the whole idea, right? We're working together to make sure that every little point of engagement coalesces into rectifying a lot of these false narratives.
Yes, we have to.
And with that, Ms. Rogers, thank you so much for your time. Appreciate it.